We'll get started. My name is Wendy, and I serve the village as the education associate. And we're really excited to have Emily Bouye here, back in the village. She was an artist in residence back in March.
Yeah.
She's been 3 months?
For 6 weeks.
6 weeks?
Yeah.
6 weeks. But everybody enjoyed her. So this is a glimpse into photography class, and it is recorded, just so you all know. And it'll be available on archive, the Holden Audio Archive, so excited about that and some new things coming up with that. But thank you, Emily, for coming, and welcome to all of you for coming in on this radio.
Hey, everybody. I'm excited to talk to you all a bit about photography today. So I have a bunch of interesting information about some basic concepts in photography. I know, especially right now, when so many of us have phones that are our cameras, it's really easy to lose track of what actually creates a photograph. So I'll talk a little bit about that, and then talk about some ways of thinking and some kind of intro photographic concepts. So kind of shake loose some different ways to think about how you take pictures. But I also want to make sure this is a conversation, because all of you come with different thoughts and experiences about photography and your own experience, and perhaps different questions or wonderings in how you're all taking photos when you're out and about Holden or traveling or doing it as a part of your own spiritual life or experience of art. So that's what we'll be spending time doing today. I just want to start with talking about some of the mechanics of how photographs are made. So I talked about this a little bit when I was here in the village doing my art residency, because this whole concept of what creates a photograph is really important to me in my own creating of images. I think it's a really fascinating process, and it's all about how light enters into a dark space and creates transformation, which I find to be a very spiritually grounding idea and part of both my practice in creating art and the very mechanism of creating photographs. So this is a cross-section of the human eye, and our eyes work exactly the same way that a camera does. So actually the process by which we see is the same process by which we create photographic images. So our eyeballs are all hollow, which is kind of a funny concept to visualize, because we don't usually think about eyes that way. But you can see that light enters your pupil and goes into the dark hollow space of your eyeball. And what happens when light enters a dark space through a very small aperture is called a camera obscura effect. So what happens is whatever is on the outside of the dark chamber gets reflected onto the inside, upside down, onto the back opposite side of the space to where the hole is. So that's how, you know, if you're looking at this candle, that's how you would see it, is the light reflects off the candle, goes through your pupil, and is reflected on the back of your eyeball. And all of those delightful sensory receptors send signals to your brain that decode image. And so the same thing happens inside of a camera. So you'll see it's set up pretty much the same way, which we forget about with like an iPhone, for instance, because you don't really see the small chamber that's in there. But in bigger cameras, you can better visualize there's that empty space in there. And so light goes through the lens, through the small aperture, and gets reflected on the back. And this happens to be a film camera diagram right here. And so film is on the back. And so then as light hits the film, it's traced into the film. It's more or less burned into the light-sensitive chemicals that are on the back of the sheet of film. And the same thing is true with the digital camera, only there is a sensor in the back. So, before I show the next slide, I'll show you. I brought some cameras to demonstrate. This is the film camera that I shoot with most of the time when I'm shooting film. And it's kind of a different looking one than what you've probably seen with 35 millimeter. But if you open it up, this square space in the back is the chamber that holds the light. So that's the dark space where light comes through to make an image. So it's pretty fun to do this. I'll have a nice slow shutter speed and wide aperture here. So if I do this, so just watch, actually I'll do this when I press the shutter, you can see actually all the way through the camera. Do you see how it opens and closes? I'll do this. It takes a little mechanics to get ready. So if you look right where the space is, you'll see it flash. Have to wind it a little bit more.
How old is that camera?
I don't actually see a flash. Yeah, I don't actually remember the date on this one. Yeah, so then you can see that's the opening where it goes. The film is in the back here and it's two reels, so it pulls over from this top reel down to the bottom reel. And so the film basically goes right over the back of this space. And that's where it goes. So when you press the shutter and it opens, and the light comes through. Yeah.
I remember my parents had one, probably 40s or 50s.
Mm-hmm. One that was similar to this?
Yes.
Yeah. And if you've heard of the photographer Vivian Meyer, she used a camera similar to this, and she did a bunch of street photography, mostly I think in the 50s. And she has a really interesting story where she was a nanny and took all of these photographs and never showed them to anyone. And her film was all kept away in her storage unit. And then many, many years later was discovered when it was being auctioned off for these incredible street photographs. So her story became really widely spread through the news, and it was a camera similar to this that she was using. And you can see actually in this, so then this is, you know, more recognizable DSLR digital camera. And if you take the lens off, you can similarly see how it opens. So that's a full second exposure. So you can see how it flips up and flips down. So it's still a chamber in the back of there, but instead of film, it's sensors that detect all of the light as it's being, as the image is being projected onto the back of the space, and it's translated into points of digital measure. So those are our pixels, basically a grid of light information that makes a digital image. So that's a little bit about different kinds of images. Pop this back on there. And then this shows a basic pinhole camera. So if you've heard of the term shoebox camera or brown box camera, it looks a little bit more like this, like a traditional like actual box. And it's the same phenomena, that's the camera obscura. And this you'll probably recognize too from the cover of the Village Voice. And so these eggshell pinhole cameras then do the same exact thing. They make the eggshell into a hollow space that I've coated with a liquid photoemulsion so that when light enters in the pinhole, then an image is created on the back of the eggshell. So you can see it's a pattern. It's the same kind of process. And that's how, oh, and then that's the positive. So the other thing to note is that with film, you get a negative image. So unlike a digital camera, which is, you know, decoding it into digital information, with film, where the light hits actually burns darker. I usually compare it to toast. You know, if you burn your toast, it's going to be dark. So where the light hits and changes things, it's going to be darker. And then when you project light through that negative, it blocks it, and then it turns light again. So the light goes through dark and back to light process, which is why film is a negative. So some stuff about taking photos. Who here takes photos and thinks about or is familiar with aperture and shutter speed? Yeah, some, maybe about half. I'll talk about it, but I didn't want to, you know, be redundant if you all knew exactly what I was talking about. So aperture and shutter speed are the two kind of critical ingredients to making a good photograph exposure happen. So when you're, you know, not all light is created equal. It's a lot darker in here. There's less light than there is outside. So if we wanted to take a photograph in this space, we would need to get more light into that dark chamber to get a good exposure than if we were outside. We, you know, want it to be a lot less light that goes in. So there are two ways to control that. You can either have the shutter open and close faster, or you can have it open and close wider or smaller. So you're always getting those two elements to balance so that you're getting the right amount of light in there. So aperture also alters the depth of field. So if you have, if you have a wider aperture, you're gonna have a shallower depth of field. So if it opens wider, there's gonna be less that's in focus. And if it's narrower, it's gonna be a broader section that's in focus. And the last thing is how sensitive your material is to light. So if you've got really sensitive digital sensors or sensitive film, then you've got more flexibility. All different, many mechanics to play with. Okay, so what makes a good photograph? There are lots of things that come into play, and there are lots of reasons to take photos. So I want, now I've been talking at you a lot, I want you all to shout out different things that you like to take photos of or reasons to take photos. There are lots of different kinds of photographs in the world. So, things to take photos of.
Landscape.
Landscape, yeah.
People.
Yes, people. Mm-hmm.
Flowers.
Animals.
Pipes.
Objects.
Pipes.
Pipes.
Fungus.
Yeah. And why are reasons we take photos? What are different ways photographs function? You ever take photos on trips, probably?
Yeah, wayside markers. Don't have time to read it, take a picture of it.
Yeah, to keep information.
You can see it up close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can study it up close.
To remember.
Yeah.
For advertising.
Advertising, yeah. Or even like in a newspaper, you know. Yeah, so
documenting. When repairing, take a picture of it before you take it apart so you know how to put it back together.
There you go.
To show people.
That's cool. Mm-hmm.
Before and after pictures.
Yeah.
Documentation.
Yeah.
Positive to share.
Memories.
History.
What about creating art? What are some artistic reasons to take photographs?
Highlight something that the normal eye might.
Something's beautiful.
Mm-hmm. To tell stories. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so lots of different reasons to be creating photos, and lots of different kinds of photos, too. And there are different categories, even. You know, you can talk about documentary photos, or photos to remember and share, family photos. Everything does happen at a specific time. That's an interesting thing about photography, is a photograph is inherently tied to time and place. But photographs can also really abstract something. You can have a photograph where you don't even necessarily know what it's of or what time or place it belongs to, which is fascinating too. So one thing that I find fascinating about photography is there's a lot of attentiveness, paying attention to what you're photographing and why. It's almost an exercise of seeing. So when you think to yourself about recent photographs you've taken, or when or why it is that you feel drawn to pick up a camera. And just even being aware of what those processes are. You know, why do you want to take a photograph? What is it that's drawing you there? Let's shout out some reasons. What are things that you think about when you are drawn to take a photograph? As you think back to recent times where you picked up the camera. Yeah.
I was on a very long walk, and this person that was walking with me would say, "Oh, look at that." And after about half an hour of her saying that, I realized every time she says, "Oh, look at that," I should be whipping out my camera, taking a picture, and then looking to see what it is.
Yeah, definitely. It's easy to do, isn't it? Snap a picture first and then think about what it is later.
Time lapse.
Yeah. Time lapse. That's definitely an interesting and specific function of photography too, to document something over time or take a lot of pictures at increments so you can see.
Instantly sharing through Instagram. So what I'm seeing right now is I'm sharing with friends and families. So hence, you know, Instagram. So you're instantly sharing your experience.
Yeah.
The moment, you know, everything.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I took several pictures on the Lady of the Lake to capture some scenes. And it occurred to me that, though I took quite a few, if I had a film camera instead of a digital camera, I wouldn't have taken as many because it costs to process the old film.
Yeah.
So I can delete the bad ones, maybe all of them. I don't know. It depends on what I find. But it's changed how you approach photography when you're my age, to think back to the box camera or the old single lens reflex cameras.
Definitely. Yeah, that's something that I think about a lot and definitely am attentive to in the historic process work that I do with film or eggshells. You know, when you spend a whole day prepping like 10 eggs to take photos, you've got like 10 shots over the next, you know, 12 hours. And so it makes you very conscious of what you're taking a photograph and why and how it's set up and getting it all right, because you're investing a lot of time and material into one thing. So that's what I really like about the historic process, is it slows you down. It makes me very reflective and conscious of that investment that I'm making in the photo. Yeah.
I've learned that sometimes I have to decide, am I taking a picture of the person or the landscape? Because you might find out, well, the person was too far away and they're walking the landscape, so it wasn't a good picture for anything.
I like to play with that focus a lot of changing, especially like with pictures turning into video. Yeah, it makes for a really interesting effect. And sometimes it is nice to have a blurry person, but beautiful moments.
Yeah.
I find myself being a better photographer. I'm a designer, so I've had to take photography lessons in school. You know, spent many years in the darkroom and all of that. But I find myself much more spontaneous with digital cameras or the iPhone.
Right.
Because I'm not thinking too hard. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking photos with my heart instead of using my brains to evaluate every single detail, because film, you only have that many things to do.
Right,
you only have
yeah.
that much time mm-hmm. and that much film in your camera.
Mm-hmm.
So there's pros and cons on both sides. And
definitely.
And all my training as, you know, being in the dark room and being a designer, I know in my head what to look for, but to be spontaneous, I actually have learned a lot more with the digital camera.
Yeah, thanks. I find that it's really helpful to be reflective about those things. I have a friend who is shooting with large format, so very cumbersome camera with the big bellows, you know, like you've probably seen pictures of. And it was so much like time and work to set up each shot. It's like, you know, I felt like my photographs were becoming really rigid and I needed to take a step backward and be more spontaneous. And so it's really important to listen to yourself. And as we're even sharing conversation about our different experiences, be thinking about what patterns you find yourself in and ways that you feel give you life and ways that you feel like you get disconnected or struggle with taking photographs. And maybe find places to challenge yourself or try something new. Find a different reason to take a photograph than you would before and see what happens. Find a different, you know, slow yourself down or make yourself more spontaneous and see what happens. A lot of the fun, I think, in playing with different ways of taking photos is you learn things about yourself and how you make images and what you come away with and what you can share in community or remember when you look back on them. So it opens up lots of possibilities just to even take time to think about what we're photographing and why and what kinds of images you're coming away with. So just to talk a little bit about some elements of composition, which similarly I'm sure many of you know about or have heard about, but maybe many of you haven't. And so as we talk about some different things, be thinking about what you think about when you take photos and maybe ways to focus on something that you don't normally think about or challenge yourself in a different part of how what there is to look at in photographs. So one thing is the rule of thirds. Is that, who all has heard of this rule of thirds? Yeah, quite a few. So, you know, you've got your viewfinder and the spaces where things really come into focus, and that was not supposed to be fun. but areas that have particular weight in a photograph. So when it's offset by a third, that's a way of really foregrounding a subject. So you can see, you get really nice sense of line and composition when things line up along the rule of thirds. And I talked a little bit about, is it too bright? Can you guys see? Should I?
Not so good.
I'm not sure which light switch to hit. Ah, there we go. So when you have a small depth of field, which you get by having a wider aperture, so more light coming in through a wider aperture, which then you can, you know, match that with the shutter speed, like I said, then you get different points of focus. So you can see how a photograph changes when you focus on something close versus far away. So that's something really fun to play with too. Challenge what you see or what you foreground or don't. One thing that was really, really helpful to me when I was first really thinking about photography with more focus, the puns just don't stop. it's the same one, focus. Has a lot of meaning. Is to look around the boundary of a frame when you're shooting something. So you see that top right-hand corner has a really bright, I don't know what it was that was back there, but really white, bright object in the corner. And so that's one thing to just be aware of too, especially if you're finding yourself wanting to slow down and be more intentional about what you're shooting. Give yourself a glance around the boundaries of the image. So thinking not only about composition in the image itself, but scanning the outside perimeters to make sure there aren't things drawing your eye out of the photograph. So as you look for the line. Where is your eye drawn and where does it move? What colors are in the photograph? What's your variation of colors? Do you have a lot of bright colors? Do you have similar tone colors? What does color tell you, make you feel in the photograph? What kind of contrast? Is it bright and contrasty or is it very variable? And what kinds of patterns or texture are drawing your eye and why? and like talked about with depth of field, maybe it's very flat, maybe everything's in focus, or you have a narrow depth of field. And really paying attention to the light, and so much of photography is about light. So watching for light, and where is light moving? And how do you find that light that has the really nice, soft, fuzzy feeling, or maybe you want something really bright and stark. And then story. What are you saying with this photograph? What is it telling about? And even if it's something very abstracted, it still has something profound to say in that. So thinking about all of those elements, either while you're taking photographs or perhaps even looking back and taking time to look at what you photographed and what's going on with them and why. And you can, I often find for myself that really beautiful meanings are drawn out of photographs when I look back on them later. So we could have some time to go for a photo walk. I know I said bring your camera so that we can take some time. And what I want everyone to think about is just be aware of your own self-photographing. And maybe pick one part, one thing you feel like you haven't thought about as much or want to give more dedicated thought space to when you're photographing. Or if you like more structured things, I have these little photo scavenger hunts that are kind of fun exercises to, you know, find different, you know, patterns or take one photo or find an object and photograph it from five different angles and see what comes out of that challenge. So you can either mentally pick one of those things or grab a photo scavenger hunt. I'm gonna see if it's raining or if we can go outside. Yeah, question?
I have a question. Does the camera on a smartphone have any adjustment in the aperture settings? Is it preset so that when you take a shot with a smartphone, you aren't making any adjustments? So how does that work?
Yeah, as far as I know, iPhone cameras are pretty much point and shoot in the most basic sense. I think there might be apps that give you different sorts of controls with your images. I've seen something along that, but I haven't actually investigated myself very
far. I think you have attachments to them that you can actually attach.
Oh, yeah.
Things to. But.
Yeah. I mean, you can still notice different things. I find that, I mean, iPhone cameras can get pretty close to objects. And if you tap different areas of the screen, you have some control over where the focus is going or where the exposure is going. So if you tap the really bright spot, it'll adjust the exposure for that, or tap the shadow, it'll adjust the exposure for that.
Way beyond my skills.
Yeah, but I've not seen anything about actually controlling the shutter speed. Yeah. And I should ask too, before we go on the photo walk, are there any questions or things people want to know more about with what we were talking about? Or wonderings or comments?
I guess one thing that I've been trying to take pictures of is the mountains.
Yeah.
And they're so huge.
Right.
You know, that sometimes it's hard to picture the best picture that you have out there because it's so huge.
Right.
I'm just wondering if you had any ideas of how to make, you know, how to make a good picture of that.
Yeah, that's a really good question. What happened, I mean, when you've got outdoor space, it's so much space. And so one thing that you'll find with making photographs is that our eyes are really amazing and are amazing and more advanced than cameras are. For the most part, anyway. but we see so broadly, and when you put a camera up to your face, you really are picking a small frame from the vastness of what you see, which both is a really beautiful and cool thing when you're making photographs, because you get such a glimpse as to where people are focusing. That was actually, this is now inside, but something I think is really unique about photography is you, when you look at photographs, get a glimpse into what another person is seeing, a sort of sense of individual perspective, which is really unique. But when you are trying to photograph a mountain, perhaps more frustrating. So with an iPhone, you can do a panorama, or if you have a camera that can do a panorama, that's one option to get wider space. The other thing is if you get a wide angle lens. So if you have like a DSLR, which is one of these kind of guys, you can get a lens that pulls out really wide. So then you can get a greater expanse than you would otherwise with like a lens like this. That's something that I really enjoyed about pinhole cameras as well, is when you, just the nature of pinhole cameras is that you get really wide angle. So like a very wide angle view. So I would, if I was, you know, taking a photo with an egg here, I would know I would get from like right down here all the way up to the ceiling, and this far right and left is there, it would be really wide, which makes it difficult to do detail work, but good for getting, you know, like mountain views, for instance. So it all depends on what kind of lens you have, or if you choose to do like a panorama to get more, which is in effect stitching together images.
And then another question that I have is, a lot of cameras have like a zoom lens on it,
mm-hmm.
you know, where I haven't really tested this or anything like that, but when you, the more you zoom, the less out of focus it becomes. Is that correct? Or, I mean, because when you're zooming in on something, sometimes you lose the quality of the picture, I've noticed, on something, especially on like iPhones.
How that works is you're not actually like creating a longer space. So like a telescope, for instance, you know, you can see very far. You're basically, in effect, moving the lens further away from the aperture. And so that creates much more of a zoom effect. And so with an iPhone, you lose quality because you're, in effect, just like going like taking what you already have and cropping it. Is more or less what it's doing. So it's not actually moving the lens and giving you more focus, or like more zoom. You're basically just cropping it, which is why you lose quality.
So is it better to just take a picture from the front, you know, the one time, and then crop it later?
It's about the same. You could experiment with it. You could try, you know, taking one normal and then cropping it and try zooming. And taking the photo. Either way, you're going to lose quality just because of the limitations of an iPhone. But yeah, if you have like a zoom lens, you might lose a little bit of quality, but for the most part, it'll help you zoom and get further. So actually, for those of you, maybe a couple who were here in the winter when I was here, we did an igloo building workshop. And so we built igloos out of the snow. And then I thought to myself, actually, like the next day, I was like, wow, what if I make an igloo into a camera? That would be really cool. So we did it. We took me, Laura, and Will, the three resident artists, turned our igloo into a camera obscura because it is a dark, it's an enclosed space. And it wasn't dark because light can get through even a block of snow. So we covered it and stuck a hole through it and put up a lens from a pair of glasses left in Garbo, like from Garbo, to focus the light. And you could catch the light from outside, and we could see the mountains outside the igloo inside on a piece of camera, or on a piece of paper, being inside a camera. So it was really, really fun. And one thing that was unexpected for me, because I've done this before, you know, you could turn this room into a camera. You just have to cover, darken, blacken all of the windows and make an aperture and then catch the light. But what I wasn't expecting was the igloo walls were really thick. We were really ambitious in our igloo making endeavor. So our bricks were like about that big, and I had a pipe that I pushed through it. But it was a long enough channel for the light that it was really like zoom. I was expecting with pinhole cameras, you usually have such a like narrow flat surface that the light is coming through, and so that's what makes it a wide angle. With the thick igloo walls, it was very zoomed, so I was getting, you know, a very small piece of the mountain, and took me several tries to actually get something recognizable, because I'd get just snow or just sky. And so by like the fourth try, I got part of the horizon of the mountain. So yeah, fascinating. Zoom. Yeah.
I just had one comment to Ruth's. If you're interested in, I don't know what iPhone version you have, but the iPhone 6, they had actually perfected the zoom lens.
Okay.
So
okay.
It's not, of course, everything that you were saying, you're not going to get perfection, but it is better than the 4s and the 5s.
Okay.
Yeah. Nice.
So the 6 Plus and the 6 have better zoom capabilities.
Okay. So
oh, then again,
yeah.
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 Yeah, so it's just a technical question about the DSLR, but people ask me this a lot, and I have no idea. What does ISO stand for?
Yeah. Oh, what does it stand for? ISO. Wow, I don't actually know.
Yeah. Because I was just wondering.
We can Google it.
Huh, we should Google it. Yeah, Google tells you many things.
ISO.
How does that translation of balance and exposure and shutter speed for you work, I guess, between the two of like pinhole cameras and using something digital? Do you find it difficult, or does the translation help you manually work a digital camera better?
Yeah, well, like with this one, so the ISO is in the film itself, so I can't change it halfway through shooting. I pretty much exclusively shoot with 400 ISO. Standard is 400 or 100. And so I have a little bit less flexibility because with this camera, I can only shoot like 400 ISO, and as wide of an aperture as 3.5, and as narrow as 22, and shutter speed only goes, well, it goes down to like 2 seconds up to 1/500, which is not actually about that fast. So there are certain limitations that mean if I'm up in Big Creek Basin on a sunny day, I can't take photos very easily with this camera unless I brought 100 speed film. You know, it's just a balance of, for me, I think about with aperture, what depth of field do I want, and what are my limitations in terms of light and my constraints with the film, and then what shutter speed do I use from there, or if it's low light. Shutter speed depends on if I want to shoot with a tripod, I can have a longer shutter speed, it's not a tripod. If I'm shooting without a tripod, I'm really limited to doing faster shutter speeds and a wider aperture. So it's just juggling all of those very practical concerns, and then when I have more flexibility, making, you know, composition decisions about aperture. With pinhole cameras, I have not a whole lot of control over aperture because it's just a pinhole. So that is the aperture, is a pinhole. And then I've calculated what the shutter speed is under certain conditions. And so then I'll calculate out, based on the light meter reading, how long to open and close the shutter, which I do manually, just like with a flap in my hand. So it's not an exact science, but it's trial and error and a lot of very meticulous notes about what works and what doesn't, and what my light meter reading is telling me. Yeah.
So how long do you want?
Yeah, we've still got 20 minutes to go take some photos.
So what time do you have?
It's raining, it looks like. So my backup plan for if it was raining is we can go to the VC, because there's all sorts of cool stuff to take photos of.
Do you have the meaning of ISO? It's International Organization of Standardization.
Oh.
The body, something to do with film speed gradients or something.
ISO. Mm-hmm. International. speed.
Organization of standardization of speed in camera and film. It talks about all the different apertures and things like that. So
yeah. Huh. Cool. Well, it's helpful that it's standard because then you don't have different companies doing, you know, calling ISO or calling film speed different things. Yeah.
Actually, there have been two different ones, haven't there? ISO and there's some other rating. I remember seeing both those ratings on the film. You have to
Interesting.
Pick which one you're using.
Yeah, totally. Cool. Okay, well, I know it's a lot of information and we've got lots of different people with questions. So thank you all for your patience and your curiosity. And let's go have some fun taking pictures. And how about we, instead of coming back over here because we'll lose time, let's just congregate in the foyer of the VC at about 5 till. Oh yeah, in the space? Yeah, sure. Let's meet then like in the middle by the labyrinth at 5 till. We can talk a little bit about what we just took a picture of.